Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello again, along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, here for our weekly look at the markets all the way from Wall Street to the Kansas wheat fields. And not unusual that it was not an unusual week, because what was unusual is beginning to be usual, particularly in the geopolitical activity that impacts the U.S. market. But let's take a look at what happened on this final trading day ahead of a four-day trading week on Wall Street, because the S&P 500 and the Dow eased today after a steep drop in oil prices pressured energy stocks. However, losses were limited by the gains in chip makers and retail stocks. But crude oil tumbled 4% to settle at $67.88 a barrel after Saudi Arabia and Russia said they were ready to ease supply curbs that have pushed prices to their highest levels since 2014. The energy index today down 2.6%. That made its biggest daily percentage drop since early February. Chevron dropped 3.5%, ExxonMobil down nearly 2%, and they were among the biggest drags on the Dow and the S&P 500. One analyst in Los Angeles said, "It's been a very rough week for oil, and that has weighed on energy names." And the S&P 500 Banks Index fell 0.4% after U.S. Treasury yields hit their lowest level in 3 weeks. Stock markets this week also have been roiled again by trade tensions with China, a U.S. threat of imposing tariffs on imported cars, and once again, uncertainty over a U.S.-North Korea summit meeting. President Trump said today the summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un could still take place on June 12th. He said that a day after he canceled it. But for the end of the week, the end of the day, the Dow average down 58 points. That put it at 24,753. The S&P 500 down 6 points at 2721. And the NASDAQ composite down 9 points at 7433. For the week, the Dow was up just 0.2%. The S&P 500 up 0.3%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.1% for the week. But today's activity, we saw a 20% surge in shares of Foot Locker. That boosted the S&P Consumer Discretionary Index. And also, it helped move shares of Nike higher, because Nike has a partnership with a footwear retailer. Trading volume lighter than usual ahead of the long weekend, with markets shut on Monday for the Memorial Day holiday. But then let's look at that oil market a little more in detail today, because oil prices fell more than $2 a barrel, thanks to Saudi Arabia and Russia talking about easing production cuts that have helped push crude prices to their highest level since 2014. Brent crude futures down $2.35 a barrel, ending the week at $76.44. And the global benchmark lost about 2.7% this week. That's its largest weekly drop since early April. The U.S. crude contract down $2.83 today. That's about 4%, ending the week at $67.88 a barrel. The discount of U.S. crude to Brent hit $8.60 per barrel. That's its widest since May 17, and not far off levels last seen 3 years ago. So now that we have looked at the day's activity and a little bit of what happened this week, let's look ahead to the four-day trading week. That'll be the first of three holiday week shutdowns, the 4th of July and Labor Day being the other two. But Monday, the markets in the U.S. will be closed because of Memorial Day. But what are we looking at? On the U.S. economic calendar next week, Consumer Confidence Index for May will be out on Tuesday, likely to show a reading of 128. And then due out on Wednesday, Gross Domestic Product, second estimate numbers for the first quarter. And they're expected to have remained at 2.3%. Personal Consumption Expenditure Index data due on Thursday, and consumer spending expected to have remained steady in April. Seasonally adjusted initial jobless claims numbers for the week ended May 26 are expected to have slipped to 225,000. And then, of course, we get on Friday the monthly report on non-farm payrolls figures for May, expected to have added about 185,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate for May likely to have remained steady at 3.9%. So that's a little bit of what's ahead in the economic data next week as far as the Wall Street activity is concerned. Look at some of the companies reporting. Thursday, dollar store chain operator Dollar Tree expected to report higher revenue for the first quarter. Discount retailer Dollar General Corporation expected to report an increase in first quarter revenue on Thursday thanks to higher customer traffic in the stores. Cloud storage provider Box Incorporated expected to post an increase in first quarter revenue on Wednesday. And then apparel maker American Eagle expected to report an increase in first quarter sales on Thursday, helped again by its Aerie line of lingerie, although the company's profit margins may be under pressure due to a step up in promotional spending. And then on Friday, apparel retailer Abercrombie and Fitch and Company expected to report first quarter earnings, which is likely to be boosted again by its Hollister line of surfwear. But the retail clothing industry has certainly had its challenges and apparently will continue to have challenges. So when we start trading on Tuesday, HP Incorporated expected to report an increase in revenue, helped by higher sales of its personal computers and printers. Analysts and investors will be on the lookout for third quarter forecast and commentary on the personal computer market. IT services and consulting company Salesforce.com expected to report an increase in first quarter revenue and profit, helped by growing demand for its cloud-based sales and marketing software. Investors will also be on the lookout for comments on Outlook and the company's MuleSoft acquisition. So that's some of what's ahead. And, of course, Federal Reserve governors are going to be on the speaking circuit again next week. Quite a bit of activity and appearances that are on the schedule of the Federal Reserve governors. Looking at some of the other reports that came out this week, global mergers and acquisitions have already reached $2 trillion in 2018. That is a record for the value of deals in the period. A flurry of deals at the start of this week, particularly in the United States, with the $11 billion merger of GE's transportation business and rail equipment maker Wabtec helped reach the milestone. And the last two periods when mergers and acquisitions reached similar levels, first of all, 2007, $1.8 trillion. That was a year before the financial crisis. And then in 2000, $1.5 trillion in M&A activity. That was just before the bubble burst on the dot-com situation. And about $28 billion in U.S. deals were announced on Monday alone, with activity in power, financials, and in real estate. But an active, active week in mergers and acquisitions. A lot I could talk about in the auto industry. Tesla made news this week, and Tesla settled a class action lawsuit over its dangerous autopilot system. And, of course, they came out with preliminary findings on the tragic accident March 20th in Tempe, Arizona, that killed a lady when a self-driving automobile failed to recognize it as a person, and that's the first ever fatality under the self-driving autos. And then Fiat Chrysler recalled 4.8 million vehicles for a defect in their cruise control system. And they asked drivers and owners of Chrysler to not use the cruise control until they're able to make the necessary correction on that. Home sales weighed on U.S. Markets this week. The National Association of Realtors reported existing home sales fell 2.5% to an annual rate of 5,460,000 units last month, and the NAR attributed April's weak sales to an utter lack of available listings on the market to meet the strong demand for buying a home. That's a story we've been hearing now for several months. Just not enough homes on the market to step up sales activity. Well, we're going to take a look at the agricultural commodity trade when we continue. Max Armstrong joins us with his guest on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
From AgriVisor, Bloomington, Illinois, Joe Camp joining us in the studio this weekend to talk about the market scene. Well, we've seen a nice climb here.
We have a good rally for the grains here lately and a lot of excitement all of a sudden. And that's no surprise because it is May. The spring has kicked off, and so is the planting season, now the growing season for most of us across the Midwest. And so a lot to talk about.
Good planting season. I mean, we've got great stands. A lot of people you talk to say they are looking at one of the best stands of corn they've seen in a few years.
Yeah, overall planting season we feel like went very well for most of us across the Corn Belt. There were some early worries about delayed planting, but most were ready to say, hey, let's just wait a minute because we know the U.S. farmer can plant a lot in a little bit of time. And that was certainly the case this year. We got a lot in just a few weeks in early May, it seemed like, across the I states. And we're still catching up in the northern plains, the northern Midwest, but all around, as you mentioned, really good stands. We talked with farmers that are very happy about the early going here.
If we ever worried about the northern plains getting planted, all we have to do is look back at last week. South Dakota farmers in 1 week's time planted 45% of their intended acreage. What about replanting? This is probably the least replanting we've seen in years, isn't it?
Right, and we talk about replanting.
Knock on wood.
Right, exactly. And we talk a lot about replanting, and it's certainly fresh in our minds from last season, right? Almost record replanting. And now we're talking about very little of that having been needed all around. It just goes back to what we're looking at here for the row crops, a very strong start to the growing season.
So we don't have to worry about planting progress anymore going forward in the future. And, when these spring planting seasons roll around, I mean, farmers prove they can get it in.
Right. They do. And we won't worry as much, of course, about the planting progress numbers that we get every week, but that crop progress report, which we'll have each Monday afternoon, will still be important. We're watching condition ratings for that wheat crop. We talk about a really strong start to the row crop growing season and yet still higher prices. Well, we've got to talk about wheat and the rough shape that crop is in, particularly the hard red crop in the southern plains, but also trouble. We talked about the northern plains and the planting pace there, some spring wheat coming in late or not at all for some folks. So it's a tale of two crops right now between wheat and then corn slash soybeans here with the two row crops again looking a lot better at the start. Prices, though, market-wise being led by wheat right now. And some demand optimism, too, which, of course, there's a lot to talk about regarding demand and the influence of trade lately.
You look at those wheat condition ratings, and what a mess they have in Oklahoma. I mean, isn't it something like two-thirds of that wheat is in poor or very poor condition? Have we ever seen Oklahoma's wheat look this bad?
No, we really haven't, and it is spotty. I can attest to that, having just rolled through Oklahoma last week. There's definitely some, you know, discouraging picture regarding that Southern Plains wheat crop. And when you couple that with wheat worries around the world, whether it be the Canadian prairies or the big growers in the Black Sea like Ukraine that are having some issues here, a little bit of trouble in the early going for Western Europe, wheat's all of a sudden a much more important storyline. And we know wheat can be a leader and that corn can follow what is the most widely traded grain in the world in wheat. So it's worth keeping an eye on for sure.
Think about all of the times we've seen this. When the world is swimming in wheat, and not that many months down the road, we start to say, wait a minute here. There may not be as much wheat as we thought. This happens on a recurring basis, it seems.
Right. Well, you can have a short crop in a hurry, and demand doesn't wait up for you, right? We're still consuming wheat at an impressive clip, and the demand is still very much there worldwide for the wheat trade. And when you see what we're seeing with supplies coming down, first off of lower acres, that was the storyline after years of low prices. Now, with yield troubles, yield worries, we're looking certainly at a case to be made for the balance sheet shrinking globally. And when we see balance sheets tighten, like we will, I believe, going forward globally for corn and soybeans too, that's a recipe for higher prices.
We saw showers start to pop up in the spring over parts of the Great Plains wheat country. Was it just too late?
It was, it seems, just too late. We think some of those showers might have stabilized the wheat crop, kept it from deteriorating even further. And we have seen condition ratings, albeit terribly low, somewhat steady in recent weeks. We are looking at, just a couple of rains that came too little too late.
What's your assessment on the spring wheat?
Again, delayed getting in. We know about the problems there in the Northern Plains and the Dakotas. But that's still, a long ways to go. We can still very much have a good spring wheat crop. We're going to, continue to look about where do we have these acres? Are we going to adjust a little bit? We know we planted, it seems, a little bit more durum as opposed to some of the traditional spring wheat crop. Still a ways to go here. We're going to have to watch the forecast. It looks to me like there is a chance for some better weather ahead. We look at the long-range forecast, nothing overly ominous here that would make us suspect we're going to have a dire situation regarding spring wheat similar to that which we have with this hard red crop and, again, the southern plains.
My goodness, a lot of optimism in the past week about China and our trade relationship and the fact that they're buying again from us.
Optimism, the opposite of pessimism, which was, I think, the case just a couple of short weeks ago when you, and this has been the theme with a lot of these trade scenarios that are playing out right now, whether it be China or whether it be NAFTA. The China one, very interesting, though, and yes, the impetus for the recent rally here this week, the idea that China could come in and buy an additional $25 billion worth of ag goods, which would double what they currently bring in. We think there's huge potential there. Now, it's early yet. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves here because we know trade talks can and do sour. But we have optimism for the simple reason that China needs our soybeans and our grains, too. And we like the cash that comes from it, you know, and I think there's still a very strong relationship to have going forward with the Chinese. And it seems as though we're very close to escaping, you know, a full-blown trade war, which we could have very well entered, it seemed like, just, again, a few weeks ago.
I'm nervous about this quick turnaround of attitude. I don't trust it. I'm bracing for a setback.
Right. And I won't be surprised if we do see a little bit of a letdown here to say, okay, well, you know, we got word that we're going to have a deal, but things aren't progressing now as much as we thought they would. And so we could see a little bit of slippage here of that optimism, though long term, I still think there's reason to believe we can continue a strong trade partnership with the Chinese.
NAFTA, any market sensitivity to that at all, given the fact that Mexico, of course, is a big consumer of ours?
Right. That continues to drag on longer than we thought it would.
There's a deadline for wrapping that up rather soon, is there?
Well, we've heard several deadlines. You know, the Republicans come out and they say, if we're going to have a Congress that will pass a bill here, it needs to come out rather soon. There's also a deadline coming up with a early June Mexican election, with the new president there potentially coming in and wanting a say in the NAFTA talks. Ultimately, we think a deal will get done. There's still a hang up over some automobile trade considerations, but it looks like the parties, Canada, U.S., and Mexico, are close to signing an agreement that will continue that relationship with, again, two of our top ag trading partners. So that's a good thing, we believe, if we can get a deal inked.
What are you sharing with your farmers? What kind of guidance are you giving those folks that you talk to?
Taking advantage of the recent rally, reward the rally. You know, those usual adages apply here. We're seeing strength. We're seeing some farmers being able to lock in profitable hedges at this point in the year. So we are encouraging some sales here for the new crop, you know, getting up to 25 or 30% sold on both corn or soybeans, and maybe a little bit more than that here pretty quickly as we head up into, you know, the June, July type crucial, you know, crop periods here.
$11 soybeans, possibility at all?
Yeah, I think so. We would need a continued momentum from the Chinese storyline that we're talking about here this morning. We would also need, as we are, I believe, bound to have once or twice this summer, a weather scare regarding the U.S. crop. And that would, I think, get the speculators bullish enough to bring us to 11.
Is it too early to anticipate that pollination period for the bulk of the corn crop? I know we always look at those early days of July. We need a lot of warmth, obviously, to bring this crop along that we have planted. But what's your gut feeling about when we're really going to be in those sensitive days?
Yeah, the early thought, talking with our farmers, that it was going to be a, you know, a pushed back by a week or two. Now the feeling is more so that we're online with a normal pollination time frame. That being because we have seen some warmer weather start to kick in.
These crops are going to jump in this warmth.
Yes, and we see the 2 week forecast. Again, I said nothing ominous because the precipitation chances are still very good, but it does run a little bit warmer than normal, and I think that ultimately can be a good thing. And again, brings us, I think, back in line with a normal type season. It worries about delayed planting and some cooler weather early on are shifting back towards normal or even a better than average type growing conditions.
Joe, we always enjoy your visits when you come by. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Max.
Joe Kapp with AgriVisor.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Taking a further look at the agricultural commodity industry this week, well, the big event today, the monthly cattle on feed report that was issued by USDA during the day, and it showed a total of 11,600,000 head of cattle on feed the 1st of May. That inventory was 5% above May 1st a year ago, the second highest May 1st inventory since the series began in 1996. Placements in feedlots during April totaled 1,700,000 head, and that was 8% down from the same date in 2017. Net placements were 1,630,000 head. And then the marketings of fed cattle during April totaled 1,800,000 head of cattle that went to market, and that number was up 6% from a year ago. One analyst commenting on the report Friday afternoon said, no fireworks, which would indicate that the number's pretty much in line with what traders were expecting, and they don't anticipate much of a reaction on Tuesday, so we will see. The wheat market has been interesting, and I asked Joe Camp when he was in our studio this week if I'm the only one surprised by the increase in the wheat market. And he said, no. He said, not at all. But when you take a look at the weather concerns in the European Union for the wheat crop there, in the winter wheat country of the United States, and then in Russia and Ukraine and in Australia, the wheat crop is under a lot of weather pressure right now. And so today we saw the wheat market rally more than 2% on dry weather fear. And that put wheat up nearly 5% for the week as traders continue to worry about dry weather. Soybeans up for the fifth time in six sessions today. Renewed Chinese buying of U.S. export shipments. And, of course, you saw the note that China indeed did buy at least one cargo of U.S. soybeans this week. That's the first time in about 6 weeks that they have been in the market. So we've seen a little bit of a recovery in the soybean market. Taking another look as we approach June Dairy Month, hearing a lot of reports that the dairy farm industry is really challenged because of the low prices. And Dean Foods, I keep hearing, having its challenges financially because of the nationwide decrease in milk consumption. As a matter of fact, alarm bells in the dairy industry rang this week when the announcement was made by a dairy company in Massachusetts that it will shut its doors in its Lynn factory and hundreds of employees will lose their jobs. The Lynn Daily Item, that's the newspaper there, reported Garlick Farms closing the local factory, laying off several hundred workers. That dairy was founded over 80 years ago by two brothers in Franklin, Massachusetts, but the company is now owned by Dean Foods, which is based in Dallas, Texas. On the other hand, beef packer margins went sharply higher, cattle prices declining, and so Tyson Foods and Cargill racking up historically high margins. And at one day this week on Wednesday, the estimate was made that U.S. beef packers earned an estimated $236.90 a head of cattle processed. That is the highest of the year. So as we look ahead to next Tuesday when we again start trading, we'll be starting with the June live cattle contract at $104.65. August feeder cattle will start at $145.52 a hundredweight, and July lean hogs will start at $77.55. And the grain market soybeans, wheat, and corn will all start the four-day week higher Tuesday morning. That's our time. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on the Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.